I just finished Space Jam 2, so this is hot off the presses.
It's fresh.
You're feeling hot. You're feeling toasted. Feeling jammed.
I'm feeling sad, confused. There's a lot of emotions I'm going through right now that I'm trying to process.
You just watch Bugs Bunny die.
Yeah, I know, for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, who bought that was going to happen? Like, they didn't even bother to give you a reason why he comes back. As if I give a shit anyways.
He just died to his friends, basically. He, like, left Cartoon Land to live with us here.
I died at the end of that movie. Hello and welcome to Unwatchables, the podcast about the films you fear the most and whether or not you should. I'm Mark D'Ottavio.
I'm Seth Troyer.
And today we're discussing two of the highest profile bombs in recent memory, so-called blockbusters that took for granted our appetite for pre-existing properties and relentless CGI, and losing their studios millions in the process. Those films are 2019's doomed adaptation of Andrew Lloyd Webber's world-conquering musical Cats, and 2021's sequel to a hit now over 20 years old, Space Jam, A New Legacy. Meow.
Every time I think you're not
going to
do...
Could you hear the pause where I was debating whether or not to do the meow?
Do I meow? And you do.
There's too many meows in the podcast for only having... this will be like our 24th episode or something. And like 7 of them open with Seth meowing. So we got to cut that down.
Finally, we have a reason. Anyways, Seth, would you like to introduce our very special guest for this episode?
Emily B is here. I'm very excited that Emily B is here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We had a little internet adventure trying to meet one another. I got into Letterboxd, like I think a lot of people did over the pandemic, and just started like commenting on each other's stuff and eventually like figuring out like, oh, you're in Ohio. Oh, you're in Canton. Like, how wild. I'm in Akron. This is excellent.
I'm in the house.
Yeah. And then Emily was in my house. It was bad news from there. But Emily is a wonderful writer. Like, you're the master of the short letterbox review that I think is like a subtle art. And quite often people just giggle to them. I know I do.
It is frowned upon, though. A lot of people hate the one-liners.
Yeah, I could see people kind of frowning on it. It's like, I did a lot of research, and I wrote a lot of words about Barry Lyndon. And this girl just said, like, I don't know, man, nice skirt. And then they get mad, you know?
You have your own podcast, don't you?
The rumors are true. I do.
Can you tell us a little about that?
Okay, I'll tell you about it. So it's called I'm So Miserable with 5 O's. No one needs to listen to it. Please listen to Unwatchables podcast instead, because it's way better and way well produced.
Always good to plug our own show. Yeah.
Yeah, no, please listen to this one instead. Don't go look up mine. the essential plot of it, I think, is just making my best friend laugh, but it's also just talking about my horrible, miserable life in ways that aren't so miserable. There's my plug. Okay, we can move on.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to add to your misery with these two particular movies, but I guess maybe that was an appropriate way to have you on.
Just trying to help.
I was dreading it. I was absolutely dreading rewatching both of these movies. Last night, I went to Giant Eagle and I bought 2 of those fake juice energy shots just so I could stay up and watch Space Jam 2 for you both.
So you were rewatching them? You had seen them?
Yeah. I did. I did take the plunge before. I actually...
Oh, boy.
Cats was the last movie I saw in theaters in December 2019, before, like, COVID happened.
I don't know why I missed it. I was super sad that I never got to it, because I was so excited when I started, like, seeing previews and hearing, like, what I had been hoping for a long time, which was, like, I feel like movies were getting too smart and too good at, like, not totally falling on their face in front of everyone. And I was very excited when this one kind of did. And I was just like, yes, I want modern badness. I'm very excited about modern badness.
Yeah, boring bad has really been having a moment as far as movies that suck at the theater. And I don't know, one of these might fit that description. But as far as Cats goes, it's funny that you say that, Emily, because this actually was almost the last movie that I saw in the theaters before the pandemic hit. It was, I think we waited till like January 2020 and Tony was there. I mean, the only reason we went to the theater to see it is my partner at the time just was insisting on it. And it was a super memorable experience. And if we hadn't just at the last second decided to go see A Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and literally the next day after we saw that, the theater and everything closed down due to COVID. And so like just under the gun, I managed to have that not be the last thing that I saw in the theater for like 2 years.
They're basically the same movie.
That movie is really far removed from humanity. I think it was very fitting to be left with that memory of isolation and the CGI cat people.
Exactly. For all I know, this movie caused COVID. Maybe it just feels like it. But yeah, we try not to talk about too many movies that are just bad on this podcast. We've only had like one other episode where the idea going in was these are movies that people hate. But these two, I think, are good candidates because they have a few things in common. We have these massive budgets. We have the kind of miscalculation that you don't often see these days as far as taking risks, although I don't know. Again, that doesn't necessarily apply to both movies that well. But as far as Cats goes, I mean, when the trailer of this movie came out, I remember everybody just kind of couldn't believe it, that it was actually going to look like that, and that's what this was. So, you know, people were making fun of this before it came out already, and it's great to see something that actually kind of lives up to that when you actually go in there. And I don't know, maybe it's kind of cool to hate on Cats and pile on to it, but I do think it's kind of a special kind of bad movie, and I think it's going to give us a lot to talk about. And then I think there will be a good contrast with the other one.
I think part of why I didn't initially see it was kind of because maybe I had like some sympathy for it, because it was, I feel like I had never experienced a movie that got that much hate the second the trailer came out, which is now a very big thing. I feel like even more movies just keep coming out and they're just already like the second they're just like dead on arrival, because you just watch this trailer and everybody talks about it and everybody like feeds all kinds of opinions at you, and you're just like instantly like, know that like, well, I'm not gonna see that because like I'm not a fucking idiot. Like the Sonic the Hedgehog movie came out and they had that whole thing where everybody hated the way Sonic the Hedgehog looked. So they had like a few months and they could be like on their little computers and they could like type his face into looking not as crazy in hopes that people wouldn't be so mad, which is just, it's just a crazy thing. It's a crazy thing. We live in a sci-fi world.
It was his teeth. They had human teeth that they removed.
What was so bad about Sonic's teeth?
I think it was just creepy that he had big human teeth. I'm not sure. I never caught up with the movie. I probably would have been more likely to watch it if there was a strange looking Sonic. I don't know.
He had like gum disease.
It had this quality where it was like they imagined like what Sonic would look like if he existed in the real world and like walked among us, and like maybe got a little too deep into like the biological details of that, and then they just animated that creature, and so it just looked kind of uncanny and horrifying and like this monster. They had to make it more cartoony looking in the redo. It looked like it's something you wanted to kill. You know,
I don't want to kill little Sonic. I don't know.
I would hunt human Sonic for sport.
I hope I'm right about this, but I'm pretty sure I read that the studio that fixed Sonic's teeth is the one that helped do some of the special effects on Cats. So there is kind of a connection there. But before we get too far into the movie, I do just want to see if anyone has any experience with the actual musical Cats. For anyone who doesn't know, it was written by Andrew Lloyd Webber, who's behind Phantom of the Opera, Evita, Jesus Christ Superstar, Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. I mean, he's probably the most successful monetarily wise composer of all time. Again, maybe we can fact check that, but I'm pretty sure about that one. And it opened in London in 1981, ran for 21 years, and an opened on Broadway the next year in 1982 and ran for 18 years, which at the time made it the longest running Broadway show ever. And it's now the fourth, I believe, with Phantom of the Opera, another Lloyd Webber show, being the one that's at number one. But at the time when it came out, for whatever reason, it was like a blockbuster musical. And it was, I think it's, a lot of people kind of blame it for the way that Broadway is today, where it's a lot of family-oriented shows, big budget, the most, you know, popular, broadest possible brush that you can paint with. Lots of international success where it ran for many years all over the world. And it's still one of the highest grossing musicals of all time. It won the Tony for Best Musical. And at least the song Memory is one of the most ubiquitous and successful show tunes. So either of you guys have any experience with seeing the musical or the old, like, you know, VHS direct-to-video version of the musical?
I remember seeing TV infomercials for it, trying to sell that VHS to you as a kid. And I genuinely very much like musicals. I've had really good taste ever since I was a little kid. And I knew when I saw those freaks on TV, I wanted nothing to do with this. I've hated it since I was 6 years old, and I hate it now.
Oh my God. I was just always so like, what could it be? What could happen? What could be happening in there? I was just always curious, like, they're clearly not cats. So, like, what are they? And I'm glad it was answered this time that they're Jellicle cats. What? And I still don't know what that means. But it means that there's something specific. And they're not just cats, that they're Jellicle cats, that they're humanoid, strange beasts. And they kind of scared me whenever I saw the poster. I was easily frightened.
I watched the film performance in preparation for this. I watched the movie. I've listened to the songs. I've heard the word Jellicle cats 20,000 times. I still don't know what it is.
Jellicle Mark, Jellicle Emily, Jellicle Tony.
It's just a word they put in front of everything.
Mark, you love cats.
Mark does love cats.
I love real cats. I don't care for the musical itself, which it's really strange. Most of the lyrics are taken from a T.S. Eliot poems from this book of poetry he wrote in 1939 called Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats. And I guess Lloyd Webber's idea was just to turn a bunch of these poems into like a song cycle. And then somebody convinced him to turn it into a full-blown musical. And I think the problems start there, which there really isn't much of a story. We get a very loose framing device that they are going to pick a cat to go off to, you know, heaven or something. It's another thing that's not very clear, heavy side layer. And that's just kind of an excuse then for them to sing song after song after song, just introducing new cats all the way to the very end. And there's not much of a story or character arcs or anything like that. It's actually, they spend, since most of the poems are written in third person, it's a lot of the times not even the cat singing about themselves. There's some other cat singing about the cat next to them,
yeah,
who sometimes doesn't even have any lines.
Don't you do that with your friends? You sing about me sometimes. And you, and
Jellicle
you.
Seth.
And you. And here's the Mark song. It is just endless parades of friend songs and friends bouncing out of nowhere and singing a song to introduce themselves. And then the thing about it is those friends don't really get developed after that. They just kind of disappear. Sometimes literally, that's part of the plot, is one of the, what's his name? Tiki Tan, or I should have notes, but I don't.
I'm going to love hearing you try to remember these cats' names throughout this episode.
Gerbil Guy, Makafidi.
Jabbity Jew. I don't even know who you're talking about.
He's Idris Elba.
Oh, Macavity.
Macavity.
That's one of the more normal names.
He is like sort of an expanded character, if I'm correct, from the original, who originally just did have like yet another like song about how he's Macavity, I'm mysterious. And they made him into a villain in this, I guess, sort of. He's just making people disappear.
Can we please use his full name during this recording? He's Macavity the Mystery Cat.
Fuck, I always mess that up.
Thank you. Keep that list up, Tony. We're going to need you. for this.
It's so long. It's taking up like half of my screen.
So even before we go into this, the story behind this movie is so fascinating because it's directed by Tom Hooper, who basically he does either these Oscar bait prestige films like The King's Speech, The Danish Girl, or probably the reason he got this job was that he did the Les Miserables musical in 2012, which was a hit. It won Anne Hathaway Best Supporting Actress. And I guess since this movie came out, he hasn't made one since. They were working with a budget that by some estimates was as high as $100 million. It only made about $75 million, and apparently after like the marketing costs, Universal may have lost over $100 million on this movie, which is, you know, the kind of schadenfreude that's really kind of hard to resist.
It does my heart good. It does my heart good to hear them just it leaking out of their pocket.
Did you see this like with a group of people, Emily, or what was the spirit that you saw this in? Were you dressed as cats?
I did lick my paws a lot before attending. I did clean up, but I saw this with my really good friend Colin in college, who he's the one who kind of taught me how to love every movie. He was like, filmmaking is important, and actually a lot of effort goes into making every movie, so we need to like every movie we see. And so I went in with a really positive mindset, but as we previously mentioned, how Cats starts off is with the song about Jellicle cats. And cats, you don't know what a Jellicle is. They never explain it. They never tell you. So Cats is making you feel stupid. So I feel like you're brought in to kind of, you either have to immerse yourself into being a cat or this isn't going to work for you.
Yeah, you assume that, okay, maybe if I knew the musical, I would understand. They explain what all this Jellicle stuff is about. But no, you're not missing out anything.
If I just sit through the whole thing. Perhaps.
Yeah, if you even knew what language they were speaking, then maybe you would give it a chance. But I don't know. I really went into it trying not to be a hater, but then the word Jellicle really pissed me off, and I was mad the whole time.
See, it reminds me of hanging out with theater kids sometimes in high school, where they would just be like giggling and like just making references to some, like a bunch of musicals or like breaking into song of some musicals that I didn't know, and I just was always like, maybe if I just hang out with them more, I'll understand. And I just like never understood.
Yeah. And I mean, really, like you're saying, when this starts out, the first time that you see these cats, I mean, the special effects in this movie are really something. They ended up having the actors wear motion capture suits and all the fur was digital because they didn't want to weigh anybody down with having makeup on. And we got to do everything with computers these days, I guess. So they got this. A few special effects companies. MPC Vancouver is the one that I read about the most. And I really just have to read this directly from the Wikipedia page because I can't leave any of this out from this story. Like, I don't want to risk missing anything. But according to Wikipedia, a report by the Daily Beast revealed a troubled production where sources within one of the VFX studios reported the staff was working 80 to 90 hour weeks to try and finish the effects by the release date, while the director, Tom Hooper, would send them denigrating emails about their work and insult them during conferences. This was additionally complicated by Hooper's lack of familiarity with the visual effects process and animation as a whole, where the director would demand entire complete renders be made at great cost or that real-life references of cats be used for every movement. The team spent 6 months producing the film's 2-minute trailer, leaving just 4 months to finish the entire 110-minute film. The film's visuals were completed just hours before its premiere. And I remember, too, the Oscars that year, after everybody had been making fun of this movie, that two of the stars, James Corden, yes, and
Rebel Wilson?
Rebel Wilson, yes.
I just saw this clip, and it's horrible.
They appear in the cat outfits, I think giving the award for best special effects or something, or maybe best makeup. And I guess it played well at the time, but you can't help but kind of feel bad, though, for all of these people who had worked on the movie and been shit on constantly for it and were just kind of doing their job, especially when you're in the movie.
Yeah, Rebel says, like, we know the importance of visual effects better than anyone as like a sarcastic joke, just like totally throwing all those poor people under the bus. Like it was totally their fault for it being a shitty ass idea in the first place, you know?
I thought the cats looked great. I wouldn't change a thing about the cats.
Oh no, I sure wouldn't.
Don't change cats.
No, that's part of the magic.
I think they looked exactly how they needed to.
I found them so garish sometimes. I gotta say.
There's something profoundly wrong about how they look. Just the conception that they're supposed to be real cats, but they're these human-cat hybrids. They're like monsters.
Well, they're Jellicle cats.
Exactly. And the
if you know,
consistency
you know,
of the scale is never right. They're in all these giant sets and props, but you can't really get a handle on exactly what size they're supposed to be. It's very strange.
I did hear they were originally going to do this as an animated like cartoon in the 90s. The same studio, I think, that eventually helped them out. It's like sub-studio of Amblin, which was Steven Spielberg's production studio. And they had like, there's some stills out there. It looks pretty good. It looks like a movie about animated cats. You know, they look like cats, actually, rather than these like sort of hybrid human cats. But that never happened. They did We're Back and Balto and shit instead, which I think is maybe for the best. They still went bankrupt, though, I guess.
Did you hear the rumor that they had to remove the buttholes that the cats had?
Oh, I was wondering what the deal was with that.
Yes, I read about this to decipher exactly what it was, because
I knew Mark would know about the cat buttholes.
I do. Although, Tony, you seem to be, the cat buttholes really made Just Woke You Up, so.
This has been a topic of discussion leading up to this recording, because we've talked in previous episodes of Unwatchables about the famed butthole cut of cats that may or may not exist. And in talking about this, Mark seemed to find a lot of evidence to suggest it was kind of a myth, or maybe had been blown out of proportion. One of those urban legend type things that would follow a movie this colossally bad around. But then it seems like there is some truth to it. There were maybe not intentional buttholes like animated into these cats, but essentially like sort of the visage of buttholes that had to be removed from some of the like more poorly constructed like scenes. So I don't know. It's we can deep dive this if we want to, but yeah, it's there somewhere out there. Some disgruntled animator who was like sleeping 5 hours a week and just furiously animating these shitty cats in and out every day. They have probably stills that they stole that have the buttholes there in all their glory, but it's not as a, we're never going to get a cut of this that has like Judi Dench running around with like her like big cat butthole in everybody's face or anything like that. That just doesn't, that doesn't exist.
Zack Snyder will put it together one day.
Oh my God.
And actually, there were so many like glitches or things that were wrong with the special effects after it was released that they sent out like an updated version of the film for theaters to download, I think, a week or two after it came out. And one of the big things was that there was a shot or maybe a whole scene where Judi Dench's entire human hand with her wedding ring on it was visible.
Oh my God, they were cheating even up to the end. They're cramming for the test.
I think I did see the pre-hand cut, and it was something that was like talked about to really pay attention for, like a little cookie or something. Mm-hmm. And it really pissed me off.
Put a glove on that bitch's hand, you know? It's not that hard.
I wanted to see a paw.
Is there more to the plot synopsis? You know, it is one of those where... So the main character, the white kitty, she's like a non-actress. Well, she's an act. Anyone who acts is an actor. But she hadn't acted before, I don't think, in the traditional sense.
She was a ballet dancer.
This was supposed to make her a star.
Well, that's not a character that's in the original musical either. This movie does actually make some attempts to adapt things and make it into something that could be a movie. And one of those things is giving us this new protagonist as kind of an entry point, because otherwise, why are all these cats just looking at the camera and telling nobody about each other? And that's why she has like no lines either.
Yes.
And they wrote her a new song, co-written by Taylor Swift and Andrew Lloyd Webber, which you could tell is a really blatant attempt to try to tell us what her arc is. And I'm not so sure. I don't know. Did Victoria make a big impression on anybody? Because this is a pretty unfortunate introduction for a new actor.
I thought she was hot.
I did too. I don't know. if you're coming forward, I'll come forward.
We thought she was Taylor Swift for a few scenes.
I really did. Oh, I just assumed she was Tay, but no.
The Taylor Swift reveal is big and grand.
I knew exactly when Taylor walked in with the bejeweled catnip.
Yeah, I'm not sure what she's doing in this movie. She's another just random person who shows up for one scene and really does not have the voice for musical theater, or at least for this.
It makes sense, you know. She would.
Some of the people fare better than others as far as the actual singing in this. Hers seemed pretty awkward to me.
I'll tell you what. Best performance for me is Ian McKellen in this. I thought he was just wonderful. Like, both as acting as a weird cat old man and singing a song about being a cat old man. I had never heard Gandalf sing before, and I think he did a wonderful job. Which kind of fits him being like an old actor cat singing about being an old actor cat.
I totally agree. That was actually maybe my favorite part of the actual musical. That role was played by John Mills in that, and it's not like he has a great song or anything, but he appears very frail, and there is a kind of pathos to him being this old cat with palsy and trembling paws. And yeah, when we were watching this last time, Seth and I watched this together because that's just how we party around here. And
it's wild. It's wild.
For the length of time that Ian McKellen had his song, we kind of forgot, you know, that this was a movie to make fun of, because he just has a kind of, you know, he was being very playful. He has this kind of effortless gravitas to him. And I would say he may be the only person who comes out of here like relatively unscathed.
Yeah, I would nominate Jennifer Hudson as a close second.
Yes.
Just because she does get the honor of singing Memory. But they do slut shame her in the beginning and make her seem like the most disgusting cat because she obviously slept with Jason Derulo.
These fucking dicks.
She spent a night with Mr. McCavity, like they say.
They were mean to her. Yeah, no, she does a great job. And I do like that song. I mean, it's... You can't help but like that song.
It's the one classic.
Especially when she does her like big old, like, is it easy to leave me? That thing, you know, that's wild.
But yeah, overall, the music, I mean, Memory is obviously the big song. And there were like one or two others that I at least kind of found to be catchy. Mr. Mistopheles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had that song in my head.
It's so catchy, oh my god, and I can never remember what they even say, because it's this weird, like, silly, silly tongue twister of a line, you know, never have I ever seen a cat like Mr. Mistopheles or something. I can't remember how it goes, but boy, it just sticks with you. I kind of liked that scene where they're all believing in him to be a real magician cat, like he always sang that he was, because he's trying to bring back Judi Dench from being disappeared by Mr. McCavity.
That's actually a really good example of how they attempted to, again, put some sort of a conflict into this movie, because in the show, she does disappear, or he in the show, but Old Deuteronomy does disappear, and then we just see for the very first time Mr. Mistopheles is just the 100th cat who prances out and just runs around doing magic while somebody else sings about him, and then he brings Old Deuteronomy back. And you could see how they don't add any lines, but they just turn this into something where it's some kind of a climax. And I think that's the struggle for this whole movie, especially that's really what Idris Elba's villain character does. Instead of him being in one or two scenes towards the end, they have him throughout the whole movie being this kind of Willy Wonka character who every time a cat introduces themselves, he vanishes them so that he can be the one who's chosen to go to wherever the hell they're all trying to go. And they're trying, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't get his logic, really, how that's going to work. I guess it's just like if he kills everybody, then surely he's going to go to heaven.
Right.
Which is a cool thing. It's just, that's cool.
Kind of makes him Charlie and Willy Wonka.
I guess so.
He has a Jehovah Witness view. his previous owners were of that religion. So that's how he... It seemed like they all had a previous life. Not all of them were born a street cat.
You clearly read the T.S. Eliot poem.
I was very confused about how this whole world worked, because they do refer to humans existing. The cat at the beginning is being tossed away, like she's being abandoned by a human. And they live in this city that's all big and giant, as if humans live there. Yet it's like a cat city where there's a milk bar and all of these weird cat things. And I could never get a handle on what reality this movie was taking place in.
Yeah, it feels post-apocalyptic or something. Or they're like the Peanuts, where there's just like, there's no parents, but there apparently are parents. There must be parents, because who built everything?
It's just, yeah, one of the many, many mysteries behind this. And I don't know, I definitely want to talk about the other people in this movie. We talked about Judi Dench and Idris Elba, but we also have these kind of two comic relief characters played by, the first one is Rebel Wilson, who's Jenny Anydots, the Gumball Cat. Barely say
what
that.
A silly thing to say, Mark.
If you were to show one scene from this movie to show out how outrageous it would be her scene where she's this house cat, has this whole number where she's dancing around and there's little mice with children's faces on them.
Oh, man.
There's dancing cockroaches, which she plucks and eats.
That's too much.
And there's one moment where she literally unzips her skin and they pull off like her outer cat and there's just more cat underneath. And it's really unnerving.
And that's also in the first 20 minutes. They don't give you any room to breathe. Mm-hmm. And then in another 10 minutes, James Corden walks through the alley. There's no escaping them.
And that's Bustopher Jones.
Bustopher.
And you can see the way that they just let him go and riff and riff. They were like, this is money in the bank. This guy's going to be our comic relief who pushes this over the end. Because they really give him leeway to just do these little bits. Whether it's him flying up in the air and like landing on a trash can on his crotch and his eyes bulging out, or just him and Rebel Wilson gets all the puns.
Oh man, that ball joke! I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, there's nothing funny in this movie that's trying to be funny.
He looks just like Mike Myers' Cat in the Hat.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, the Mike Myers' Cat in the Hat really is what everybody kind of resembles, except in a more uncanny CGI kind of way. And that's part of what makes me feel bad, particularly for Jennifer Hudson, because clearly, I don't know, when I see her come on, like she just is emoting the hell out of these songs as if she's going for that Oscar, you know. Anne Hathaway for Les Mis got her big Oscar for her big show-stopping moment in the same director's Les Mis, and you can see her just reaching for it, and the whole time she looks like a deep fake of the Cowardly Lion or something.
Yeah, she looks like a Bratz doll version of a cat. It's
yes.
It's very unnerving. And I don't even know why she agreed to do this, because she already has her EGOT. I think everyone was convinced this was going to be a renowned film. I think they were lied to. Or no one knew it was happening. I don't know.
Absolutely. I know. There's something just at the core of this that's so fundamentally just misconceived and could never work. Like, I'm not sure there is a good movie that could be made out of this musical. Frankly, I don't even think there's a good musical to be made out of this musical.
I think that's what's kind of the interesting part of this, and it's an interesting thing about various properties that keep on getting remade. Like, this is an example of something that was kind of hated by critics. Like, audiences loved it, so therefore they were like, well, money, audience can't be wrong, like it must translate to film just fine, right? Even though it was like ludicrous from the start, and it is kind of like meaningless for the sake of being like silly and meaningless, which is kind of cool in its own way. But
right. They couldn't just say no because the musical was too popular. Everybody knew it and it just made too much money. But they couldn't go. They also couldn't just have this be an animated film, which is the only thing that could have come close to not being this bizarre nightmare that it is now. Yet then they couldn't really market the stars the way that they want to. So everything is this weird half measure they're kind of forcing through. And they clearly were expecting this to be, you know, a family hit. coming out around Christmas time. They were probably expecting it to rack up some Oscar nominations. You know, they got their original song added to it to get that Best Original Song nomination. And it just all blew up in their faces. And it's hard not to have some fun with that. Although I do feel bad for the people who worked long and hard on this. And maybe that's what your friend Emily was trying to say going into this.
Yeah.
These poor people.
He wanted me to appreciate the time that went into it.
Yeah. And I really do. I do appreciate that. But that is part of the train wreck fascination of this movie. It is a kind of bad that you don't see every day. It's not, I never was bored. I can say that much.
It's fascinatingly bad.
Part of the problem why it doesn't translate well to the screen is that I think there is some sort of sexual nature to seeing it in person. There's something about dressing up as animals, as we know, it's a big phenomenon. And I had a friend who went to see it in high school, and she came back, like, very changed. And I think part of the allure was that, like, the human cats brush by you as they're performing. Like, they touch you a little bit.
Ooh.
So I think with no promise of touching, and the fact that they just looked very, like, frumpy, that's why the movie wasn't successful. That's why.
Because they're just teasing that they're going to come up and, you know, tickle you or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, in this movie, it did get something of a second life of in kind of that Rocky Horror way, where I read that there were certain cities that would show this almost in repertory, and they would have sold out screenings. So they would be midnight screenings. People would be dressed like cats. They would be singing along. And maybe that is the place for this movie. It's a strange experience to sit at home watching it alone, just like it is watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show, as opposed to with a crowd and maybe getting into the spirit of it. So I could see having fun with that. And not every bad movie could hold up in that kind of a situation.
Yeah, I think it is interesting what Emily's saying, even though it's kind of a joke, but also not a joke. I don't know. It is like this thing that you can't help but think about must have been in the people's minds making this, because it is like coming out around this time where like cosplay is a big deal and furries are a big deal. And all of that crosses over with a certain, or can cross over with a certain sexuality or something. So I don't even know, like maybe on like certain days they were like debating on whether or not that was an angle. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't know if it was intentional, but how could this not be a huge movie with furries? I mean, how could it not be? The whole cast are these human-animal hybrids.
I may have had a little awakening. I don't know.
I read an interview that Taylor Swift gave where she talked about just like the way they would approach that idea about like how human or cat-like they needed to be. And sometimes they would spend hours, you know, working on a scene only to come back later and say, you all looked too human. Like, we're going to redo all of today's scenes, but this time you're going to be crawling around. Or other times they would say it was like everyone was too cat-like, and like the choreography got lost in the cat-like movements, and now we need to redo these scenes about dancing. And it just seemed like there was no vision for how that should translate to the screen. It was just like a day-by-day sense of like, okay, well, this felt weird. Let's redo it now. Maybe we should go back. Just like, just chaotic everywhere. Like anywhere there should have been like a creative voice in this doing something. It just like, it seems like there was not.
It really sounds like Tom Hooper just did not know what he was doing with this. In addition to, by all reports, being a grade A asshole too.
Ooh, really?
So maybe if this puts an end to his reign of bad Oscar movies, you know, winning awards, that's one good thing that came out of Cats.
Did you guys know about Cat School?
I did read about Cat School.
Yeah. This is also from the same Taylor Swift interview. So Taylor Swift said that the cast attended something called Cat School that they held on set, I think every day. And this is a quote from her. Cat School was something in which we would literally do hours on end of barefoot crawling on the floor, hissing at each other. We learned about cat instincts and the way they carry themselves and the way they process information and the way they see the world, the way they move. I think if there's some value in this, it's that, not that there are many actors here who are like contemptible, but there are at least some people here that it's nice to imagine them getting knocked down a peg or two. So the idea of like Tom Hooper having this like insane writhing around, hissing at people, Cat School, where people like Taylor Swift and Jason Derulo and James Corden are being kind of humiliated, I think is funny. and then to have Tom Hooper himself have to be humiliated by the final product is pretty funny. And then even the ones spending the money to do all this humiliation being themselves humiliated by losing like $100 million is just like, I think you can appreciate this movie on that level, if no other. So 5 stars from me.
I told Seth when we were watching this that what I really want is the video footage of them rehearsing and filming this before the special effects. That's the movie that I want to see. I want to see Cat School.
Oh, Cat School, the documentary, yeah.
I want to see their faces when after all of their months of filming, they saw what it looked like finished. There's a lot outside of this movie that adds to it.
Mark, Seth, and Tony, I'm dying to know, if you had to insert yourself into this movie as a cat, what scene would you want to be in? And what's your cat's persona?
Maybe I'll sing my song first, then Mark sings his song, and then Tony will sing his song. And then you have to sing your song, Emily.
Oh, I'll sing my song right now. I actually pictured myself, I was in the James Corden scene. I'm just a normal looking gray cat. And I'm like within the trash. That's where I would put myself in the movie. I think my name's the Bone Muncher and I'm the most normal cat. But if I had to like have a song, I'd just be like, I'm eating my trash. My cat would.
That's already as good as any song in this movie.
It's the trash cat.
Mr. Mistopheles looks just like the tuxedo cat that I have. So I definitely related a lot to him. And I've been singing to my cats with the melody of his song for days now.
I really don't know how to answer this because I do not know what is happening in this movie. I guess I would like to be the cat that gets to just be like assumed into heaven in a hot air balloon at the end after singing the coolest song. Like, but beyond that, I don't know what any of these cats are doing.
Yeah, let's talk about that ending because once they finally,
I didn't get to sing
alert,
my song yet. I didn't even get to sing my song yet.
Okay, if you're going to sing a song, I'll stop right now.
I'm TikTok, the TikTok cat, ticking. It's time. That would be, I don't know. I would live in the clock tower and I'd be orange. I'd be one of those like tiger cats. I had more time to think about it while you guys were all like thinking about yours. So if you're impressed, that's why.
Thank you, Seth.
I wish I had something that good.
But it would, you know, the song would have a bunch of like gears, like and like Bjork in Dancer in the Dark. It would be a lot of like music, concrete kind of music.
Yeah, I would just hop onto the whole Jellicle thing, because so much of this is just made up words. They're like, well, look, it's Jellicle door. I'm going to go take a Jellicle bath and do some Jellicle math. Sorry, can we? I guess I'm going to get past this part.
What were you going to say when you interrupted my song?
Just that image of they finally, again, spoiler alert, let Jennifer Hudson is the one who gets to go to wherever they're trying to go to. And it just ends with them putting her in this basically hot air balloon and sending her off into the sky.
It's fucking hilarious.
And they have a big, long final number. And we just return at one point just to see this thing just going and going. It's up in the clouds now, clearly way into the atmosphere where there's no oxygen left. And I just want to see this cat asphyxiating.
It's a test for your cynicism, basically. Are you a big old cynic who thinks that there's no heaven if you go high enough as a cat in a hot air balloon? Or do you still have a little bit of that little boy Mark in you left over that believes?
I died inside during this movie, so it's not there.
What do you think, Emily? Do you think she goes to heaven?
I think all cats go to hell. I don't even particularly like them.
Oh, shit.
Oh, we can get out of here right now.
You know, I did hear there is another poem by T.S. Eliot. This is not a bit that is called Pollicle Dogs. And it's just a whole other, it's just dogs. And they're called Pollicle Dogs. And they do pollicle things. Yeah.
So when they get to the final line of this, and Judi Dench looks at us and just says, a cat is not a dog, as if that's what this whole movie was about. Again, that must just be some other line from a poem that he didn't bother to turn into a musical.
That is such a, like a crazy info dump of like complicated wordplay and like world building that I don't understand. Like I kept on trying. She keeps on saying all these like, they seem like non sequiturs and then they aren't and then they are. And there's all these, I wish I had the lyrics up, but there's all these weird things that she says that are just like, it's not, but it is. but sometimes only when it is. All this kind of like, and if you just like tease it apart, like everything else anybody's saying in this movie, it just totally doesn't mean anything. Because it's just like about saying things that seem silly and grandiose and are fun, but it's not about like it meaning anything.
That's Cats in a Nutshell. So the question is, would you unwatch this film if you could? And any other final thoughts you might have about Cats before we move on to a different kind of disaster? Emily, would you like to start us out?
Ooh, I will. So about 4 hours ago, I did rent this on my mom's Apple TV account. It was $3.99. She's really upset with me. And so for that reason, I would unwatch this movie because my mom's pissed. And
send her to us. We'll pay for it.
Okay. I think you can get whatever phenomenon out of seeing this horrible, harrowing CGI. You can watch the trailer and get everything out of it this two-hour movie gives you. I don't think it's worth putting yourself through it. So I would unwatch. I would rather not know.
That is a good point. And they did have many more months to work on the trailer than the finished film.
That's pretty fair. I would not unwatch it. I would say that I enjoyed it quite a bit with you, Mark, at least. And who knows, maybe it's just because you were there with me, you know, because it's all about who's there with you while you're riding through life. But I did enjoy it on a just like, this is fucking crazy and I can't believe what I'm seeing. And I was just like genuinely, I think it's not all me laughing because it is bad and silly. I think there is some genuine like built into Cats like silliness that only adds to that effect being just like so overpowering and such a like what the fuck experience, because it's just already like on the page. It's just nonsense for the whole runtime from the beginning, from the poems. They're just nonsense. I think they are just like kind of silly poems that T.S. Eliot wrote. And that sort of feeds into the danger. It's a good example of the danger that musicals can fall into, because it's very easy when you can just like write songs as good as like Andrew Lloyd Webber and stuff to just kind of like A plus B and emotional chord plus emotional audience playing to the audience or whatever. It just winds up being this, it feels like something, but it's not. And it's just like, it's all for the sake of just being loud and being silly. And that's what audiences, I think, gravitated towards with this, because they didn't. They probably appreciated the fact that it was just fucking nonsense and they didn't have to follow any plot. And it was just all the like fluff and silliness of musicals without any of the other stuff.
I agree with pretty much all of that. Again, I'm not a fan of this show. And if there's any way that I have to experience it, I would prefer this full disaster area version of it.
With the butthole.
With or without the buttholes. And yeah, so in a way, this takes something that is just kind of mediocre in the first place, and by making it so outwardly bad, makes it more interesting. And so I was definitely fascinated just to watch it the entire time. So it is bad. It's technically worse probably than the show or the film's performance of it, but this is always going to be the Cats in my heart.
Now,
I would unwatch The King's Speech.
Oh, that's right. He directed that.
That was my way of segueing us into the next film.
Oh, yeah. That helped. That's very helpful.
Thank you. All right. So our next movie came out a few years later. And oh, boy. This is one that is a sequel. So in a way, it's kind of a property in the way that Cats was. But this is, again,
it's many properties.
True. But the first one is the original Space Jam from 1996, which basically was a spinoff of these Nike Super Bowl commercials that had Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan in them, which kind of shows you the motivation and behind it and the sensibility of the film as far as being a brand extension. The main difference, though, is that it was a big hit. It made like $250 million worldwide. It was one of the highest grossing films of 96. And according to Wikipedia, it is to date the highest grossing basketball film, which is, if you want to consider it a basketball film, Hoosiers or Hoop Dreams or any of the number of good movies out there. Apparently Space Jam is the one on top. But I do want to get any impressions you guys have of that, because we were probably all around the age when that came out for it to leave some kind of a impression just from the saturation, right?
Well, I was a baby, but my sister is your age, and she was watching it constantly on loop on the VHS. And so I grew up thinking that Space Jam was the epitome of cinema and animation, and I held it in like really high regard.
Yeah. I remember my dad's best friend came over, and we hopped in the back of his pickup truck. Me and his son were in the back of the pickup truck, and I had never heard of Space Jam. I didn't watch trailers. I wasn't up on cinema, so I didn't know what I was in for I don't even know how old I was, but I just hopped in the back of that truck, and when I came back, I was changed. I think like all through I think it was preschool I was obsessed with basketball, and I'd never given a shit about basketball. And I would just act like Michael Jordan as a little kid at the beginning of the movie, being like, if I practice, I can go to college. It was like the first time I had ever heard of I think I still didn't even know what college was, but I kept on saying that, like, I'm going to go to college and play basketball. And I would just like stay out in the rain and like, I'm not coming in. I'm still playing basketball and shit. And it was very profound. I also love the shit out of the Looney Tunes. I'm a big Looney Tune fan.
Yeah, when I was around that age, I mean, I was pretty much the opposite of a sports kid. So I know who Michael Jordan was as a celebrity, but I didn't really care about the basketball part.
Oh, by kindergarten, I was done. Don't worry.
Yeah. And I was, I was swept up in the excitement, though, of just the marketing and the combination of live action and animation. Somewhat, with the Looney Tunes being in there, but also it was this kind of first glimpse of a shared universe where, oh, it's all the different Looney Tunes from all the different things all together, and they live in this cartoon world, and there's a mythology behind it. And I think really the main reason that it's looked back on fondly today is mainly nostalgia, and, it taps into nostalgia for Michael Jordan, for the Looney Tunes, for just 90s blockbusters. And I did rewatch it for this before watching the sequel. It does play pretty differently now with that haze of nostalgia gone. Although honestly, the thing that's aged worse about it is that the inspirational hit song is being sung by R. Kelly,
yeah.
Which is really hard to find a heartwarming these days. So that's kind of the first thing. But otherwise, I don't know. Michael Jordan he's game, but he is not much of a screen presence. He can't even like give a press conference in the movie and sound like a human being.
He's probably like, is this a real press conference? Or is this, he's like confused by the layers of breaking the fourth wall and stuff.
Maybe. Yeah. And even as far as the Looney Tunes, it doesn't capture that much of their spirit. There's a few things that are kind of funny, but it throws in a lot of just fart jokes and there's actually like a Pulp Fiction joke in it that I did not recognize at the time when it came out. That's like Elmer Fudd and somebody are looking like Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta from that movie. So it does throw in some just glib pop culture references. And I totally forgot Bill Murray is in it and is not funny at all.
Oh, I think he's very funny. I challenge that. I think he's very funny in the first Space Jam.
In that movie?
Yeah.
Put it back on, Seth. Not only does he look like he's not funny, he doesn't even look like he's ever been in a movie before. Like, he barely even showed up for
it. Yeah, I think he looks kind of coked out. And he's just like talking about how he's like really passionate about the game. He's like trying to strategize plays for Michael Jordan and stuff. He's very serious.
I think you actually see him cash his check on camera for that movie. So anyways, not a big pedigree to live up to, but I think people's memories are fond. And then they did spend the next 20-plus years trying to make a sequel, and there were ideas about maybe having it be with Tony Hawk or Tiger Woods or Jeff Gordon.
They had a Spy Jam at one point. It was going to be Jackie Chan as a spy with the Looney Tunes, and it didn't happen for whatever reason.
All great ideas.
Maybe a better idea.
But it ends up with LeBron James, and we even get an opening scene just like the one from the first Space Jam that's in Akron, which is where almost all of us are right now.
Which I'm a little worried. I didn't even think about it going into this episode. I was like, oh, LeBron James. Like, it's a good thing for Akron. We're doing this, like, episode. And then I was like, we're going to shit on the movie that he's in. We're going to get Akron canceled, you know? We're going to get run out of town.
We might. Although not that many people from here could have seen this movie or would have made more money.
Or listened to this podcast, so.
Sure. Although, to be fair, this had like a $150 million budget, and I think the final total was like $163 million that it ended up making. But this did come out during COVID, and this was one of the movies that Warner Brothers put out on HBO Max simultaneously when it came out in theaters. So I don't know how fair it is necessarily to consider it a flop on the level of Cats, because this was kind of a strange time as far as movies making money in the theaters. But it did get pretty bad word of mouth. I mean, I haven't run into anyone who liked it, and I know that it got terrible reviews. So what is the difference between this and the first Space Jam?
LeBron James is a better basketball player.
Ooh.
Okay.
That's the difference.
We're cutting this part out. This is too controversial. We have limits on this podcast.
I will say, I think he might fare slightly better than Michael Jordan on screen as far as just his line readings. I know that.
Boy, I also disagree. You know,
man, you got to watch that movie again.
Definitely. No, I watched it recently. I was drunk, but I don't know. Maybe I'll have to watch it again. But I think I just find Michael Jordan to be a lot more charming on screen, just in general. Not a great actor, but I don't know. Also, maybe the lines were a little better. I don't know. But we're just comparing. Either one, pretty bad idea, making a basketball player have to carry a movie with a bunch of cartoons, you know, like just operating in some green screen and having to act, which is hard for good actors. It's really hard for non-actors.
Sure. Well, where do you fall on that, Emily?
Well, I do think Michael Jordan is a freak human who like feeds off human blood. And so I don't think he translates as very friendly. I think he's a bit snarky to the tunes the whole time, where I genuinely do believe in LeBron and Bugs Bunny friendship. I think it's real.
See, I like that Michael's giving him a hard time, but.
Well, good. I'm glad Emily and I are on the same side here.
Hey, I can be alone.
I think there are stretches of this too where he is actually an animated character. And I think that he's a little more comfortable doing the voiceover.
Yes.
And they can add the expressions instead of him having to do them on his face.
His face, do the proper thing, yes.
But I know he did have a small role in Trainwreck a few years before that kind of put him on people's radar and was like, oh, he could be kind of funny or charming. I don't really remember. It's been a while since I've seen that. But that was his kind of claim to fame before this as far as being on the screen.
I mean, as far as like plot goes, it's kind of a basic. Dad, you don't get me. All you care about is basketball, Dad. He's like playing basketball with his sons, and one of his sons is very clearly like not interested in basketball, partially because LeBron makes it not fun because he's just so like, it's LeBron, you know, it's you're just so good and I'm just a guy and I like video games. He's designing a video game in his bedroom that's like a basketball video game, and it has like wonderful fake child technology that he's like, he's on his computer and it's like three-dimensional and he's scanning things with his phone and stuff. There's a lot of like great silly sci-fi modern tech in this movie that I feel like I haven't seen since I was a kid, and like watching movies in from the 90s where like a kid would like flip out some device that is just like not real.
Well, this is basically, it's Ready Player One, isn't it? We have this, what they call the Warner Bros. Serververse, which just saying that makes me want to never watch a movie again.
Yes.
And just this universe of all of their well-known intellectual property, and we have the villain who lives inside, whose name is Al G. Rhythm.
And it's Don Cheadle.
And it's Don so Cheadle. Funny. And he, you know, one thing leads to another, and he basically traps LeBron James in inside the serververse, the Warner 3000, so that he can rescue his son, and they have to play a basketball game for some reason in order for him to get out. And Don Cheadle is Al G. Rhythm, and boy, does he just seem like sleepwalking through this movie to me. There are certain scenes early on, especially between him and LeBron James, where, like, if I hadn't known ahead of time, I wouldn't even know who was the Oscar-nominated actor and who was the athlete. Like, they are both just—he just seems so bored to be there. And, I mean, Sarah Silverman turns up at some point. I don't know why she's there. You never see her again. Like, they just wanted to throw some recognizable faces in there. And, yeah, they end up going through this little world and having to assemble a basketball team. So now we have the Looney Tunes back, but they're also trapped inside all these different movies. And I don't know. My first question here, though, is just in 2021, like, are we still looking for these, like, superstar athletes to be in movie vehicles? With the internet and everything, is that even that exciting anymore? That, you know, maybe seeing... spending an evening with Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny would have been cool back in 1996.
That sounds cool all the time. I don't know.
Couldn't you get your LeBron fix in some other way now than a movie like this? I don't know. I can't think of another thing like this, like this kind of brand extension even being necessary anymore.
What about Kyrie Irving's movie Uncle Drew? Did that fare well?
I don't know that.
Given that I've never heard of that, I'm going to guess not.
Explain.
Oh, okay. I believe Kyrie Irving was in a commercial as a character, Uncle Drew. And then people thought it was so funny and liked it so much. They thought, let's make this into a real movie. And they did.
And that always goes great.
What's the commercial about?
Uncle Drew, I think his character is he's an old man who has the skills of like an elite NBA player still.
I want to see that.
Man, anything that works at 20 seconds long, obviously, is going to make an awesome full-length movie.
2.5 hours.
I'm familiar with this, at least with the commercials that spawned the movie. I haven't actually seen the movie, but I did just look it up. And I would say, to answer your question, this actually, compared to Space Jam, A New Hope or whatever, actually did much better because it made about $50 million on an $18 million budget. So I think that's probably the way you do a useless basketball star the comedy vehicle these days. Not this way.
Ouch.
The demographic was like Super Bowl commercial watchers, so I don't think Space Jam A New Legacy was able to tap into that.
Yeah, and I wonder what the demographic is, because you have the whole LeBron James aspect, but you also have, I don't know, people who remember this movie from 1996 fondly, which I'm not sure how many kids these days really would. And do they even care about the Looney Tunes at this point?
Yeah, I mean, the Looney Tunes were already like not a big deal to us as kids as a whole, like at that, at like when we were young. So it is kind of wild to just keep on as to see it popping back again. This was like this weird thing where I was like, finally, I think as much as I love Bugs Bunny and shit, I'm just like, don't ever bring him back, please. Like, he's them killing him at the end of this movie. I like was fine. I was like putting the pillow on his head at a certain point. It's like, you shh, quiet. Don't even sound like yourself anymore. I don't even know who this voice actor is.
It's just like the end of Cuckoo's Nest.
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely trying to be for kids. So, especially for like the first 20 minutes, I was kind of like, maybe we're just kind of being dicks by adding this to the podcast a little bit. And like, maybe this isn't worthwhile or something to talk about as far as modern flops are concerned. Maybe it didn't deserve the Razzie. I do think it deserves all the flack it gets for what it tries to do with trying to sell kids and adults that are obviously bringing the kids on the brand of Warner Brothers and like this whole like shared universe, it all being just like a shameless commercial for Warner Brothers and everything they have as properties. This is definitely like the craziest extension, like, well, just dumbest extension of the whole fad of metaverse and shared universe that came about with like the Marvel movies and fucking Rick and Morty, which Rick and Morty are in this fucking movie at a certain point.
Oh yeah, they are.
And like it doesn't even matter like what some of the people are saying, like Don Cheadle or Rick and Morty that come through the wall at a certain point. I'm just like in such shock that like what's happening and like what they're even trying to keep up with, like what the purpose of any of this is other than to just be a commercial. It feels like I'm waiting for the fucking thing at the bottom to come up that I can just like skip to the YouTube video that I'm supposed to watch the whole time.
Yeah. And for the first, I don't know, half hour or so, I was thinking, well, this isn't any worse than the first one. You know, it's kind of a lightweight family film with a lot of just rote, you know, family drama and the little kid who just wants his dad to let me do me, dad. And then they get to that server verse, man. And it really just felt gross. Because first of all, who's a fan of just Warner Brothers properties? Like, oh man, that's my favorite brand property. Like, who even knows that their studio does Harry Potter and DC and who cares? And every time you see something, you just go, oh, okay, so this is one of the three studios that owns everything, and I guess these are the things that they put out. And so they go through Harry Potter world, they go through Wonder Woman and the DC world, and we see an animated Justice League. But then they turn up in fucking Mad Max Fury Road, live action, and Wile E. Coyote is in there.
That was crazy.
Just for people who love Harry Potter and Mad Max, and then this sequence of this whole like stretch of the film is so disgusting. There, all of a sudden, he's in Austin Powers. We're in another 90s movie, and Elmer Fudd comes out as Mini-Me. And it's just like every guy who, I don't know, would still be in an Austin Powers costume in 2022 and going, yeah, baby. It just, who is this for? Because then the next scene is they insert him into Casablanca. And when she says, play it again, Sam, it's Yosemite Sam. And at this point,
Mark,
it's pretty good.
Rick and Morty, we get Game of Thrones, The Matrix. Because what is funnier and more relevant than a Matrix joke in 2021, where we have Granny and Speedy Gonzalez show up? I don't know who would enjoy this.
It's for me. I have to be honest. It's for me.
You know, maybe I should have... Before I came on so strong, I should have saw where everybody was coming from.
I invited Emily on the podcast because Emily is the biggest Space Jam 2 fan I know.
She has an Austin Powers wig on right now, and I was wondering why.
I'll say that I'm a huge LeBron devotee. I will watch anything that man does, including like horrible Lakers games. And I like Mad Max imagery. And so I have to admit, that montage where LeBron is in the different movies, I loved it, and I want to see LeBron in Casablanca. It makes no sense because 12-year-olds aren't going to know it. I watched this with my dad, who's 60 earlier. He was pissed. He was like, "Why the fuck is that in there?" He's like, "Who the fuck is going to know what that is?" He was mad. So I don't know. Personally, I had a lot of fun. It felt very like Princess Diaries, like makeover montage. I thought it was the best part of the whole entire movie. And I thought the animation within it is very visually striking and well done. And it's better than Cats.
Ooh,
that's a good review.
Well, you know, I will say this. That is the least like tedious part of the movie, because you can't believe what you're seeing, and it is, where are they going to go next?
Oh yeah, it's not tedious. It definitely sucks me in as far as just like my brain being just in overload of seeing Foghorn Leghorn on a dragon saying winter is coming.
Yeah, it was good they didn't put him in any of the like rape or castration scenes from that series. Just pretend that it's all about dragons.
Oh, LeBron is a Hufflepuff. We figured out that LeBron is a Hufflepuff through this movie.
So that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
It's real. It's just a fact.
That idea on its own is very funny.
He's really psyched in this movie about it, too.
I want to offer some kind of rebuttal to Emily's take there, only for the reason that if I'm going to contribute to the discussion of this film, this is the last point chronologically that I would be able to do it. So I'll admit, like, you know, Sing It Sam and then it being Yosemite Sam, like, under other circumstances, that joke is right up my alley. But in this context, it was just like, there's something profane about this. There's something just like obscene and awful about this whole thing. And then when like Rick and Morty showed up, that was the specific moment. I'm not a Rick and Morty guy. I've never really seen Rick and Morty. Something about them annoys me. And in this, seeing them here, it was like, okay, all right, I get this is something that is like, I cannot approach this and come out with my soul intact or something. And I had to stop watching the movie at the 41 minute mark. I just was like sitting there, this like deep malaise came over me. And I'm suddenly started thinking about like art and contact and branding and this futile exercise of all of these people making these things over like decades and decades and decades. And then them getting added to this horrible like collector's showroom for him to show off to you in this kind of like gross, obscene way. And I'm like, this movie is death. This is the death of art or what. I just like turned it off and I just laid in bed. And I think I just kind of like laid awake through like a really mild anxiety attack for like the next 2 hours, which would be about the runtime of the movie if I had just like toughed it out anyway. And so I think I preferred just the horrible silence to any more of this. But so yeah, 41 minutes, I was out.
You know when it's time to leave, honey.
Coward.
You know. I mean, that is the question that this and a bunch of this wave of self-aware Hollywood properties, that's sort of the question that is posed quite often. And sometimes it like lands, like, because like the whole thing is like these big corporations figured out that we know that they're big corporations and it's not Batman. It's like, it is Batman, but behind Batman is all this like money and not fun stuff that keeps Batman going and we throw stuff at in order to keep it going. But now it's like Warner Brothers itself is trying to come out from behind Batman and be like, I know, I get it. I'm here. See, like I'm being upfront with you here. And to a certain extent, I kind of appreciate that. But at another end, it is just sort of like, it's still a problem. Like, even if you are like pointing to it, right? If you just are a person who like, I'm at least admitting that I'm fucking lazy or I'm, you know, I said it, you know? So, but it doesn't like make it go away, I guess. It is sort of, I don't know, it's a point of contention. What are more of your thoughts on this phenomena, Emily?
I've been biting my tongue.
Yeah, any counterpoint to the death of art?
Tony, a lot of respect for you. I totally see where you're coming from. And some, I do agree in a lot of regards, but you all fell into a trapdoor earlier where you said you don't know why Sarah Silverman's there. And I'll tell you why. So, what is Algie Rhythm's big plot? He wants to turn LeBron into Data so that he can insert him into these hit blockbuster movies. That's the big sinister plot. And so then Sarah Silverman receives this plot from the AI. She's pumped up. She's being like a bitch executive. You can beep that if you're not allowed to call a woman a bitch on the show. She's being the evil entity. Sarah Silverman is the true entity because she's taking the horrible AI idea. And then that's the entire plot of Space Jam is being like, look how ridiculous it is if we put LeBron into these movies. Isn't this all ridiculous? And where the real fault in this movie is that the basketball game wasn't good. And that is the main problem.
Yeah, let's be clear though. We've just spent a long time talking about this really short stretch of the movie, but the basketball game is like over an hour.
That's for the kids.
It clearly wants us to be invested in this. It spends so much time on it. We get a whole arc of like, oh, now we're losing, and now we got to learn to be ourselves. We got to do this. We got to do that. And I got to talk to my son. And he's got to let him do him. And we have the whole thing with Bugs Bunny has to like sacrifice himself, and you know, who really cares at that point? But I
care.
I was like, I could not pay attention to any of it because I was staring into the stands the entire time. And this is even weirder to me than the other stuff that they did is that they have in the audience, you got the Iron Giant, you got the Gremlins, you got the Mask, you got King Kong, Space Ghost, Voldemort, the clown from It is in there. And they show them a lot just in the background. So I could never look away.
Don Cheadle is standing next to one of the nuns from The Devils.
Really?
I looked it up. Yeah. Ken Russell's The Devils. They just did that just for you, Mark.
And you know,
just for people like you, me and you. It's for everybody.
I believe that because this is no joke. The Droogs from A Clockwork Orange are seen very clearly.
They're there.
In the audience, like cheering. And that's just another thing of just reducing everything to content.
It's giving you all the things you want.
Maybe the movie has a message ultimately that is against that, but it does seem like it wants to still, that is the selling point for the movie, is for you to see that kind of stuff. I was especially distracted by, they had all the different generations of like Batmans, and like I saw the Jack Nicholson Joker, I saw the Heath Ledger Joker, I saw a lot of characters from Batman Returns, including the Penguin and Catwoman, but then next to like the Burgess Meredith Penguin, it was wild. Like I was seeing minor characters like the killer circus folk from Batman Returns were out there. And I don't know, man, I don't know what the fuck happened on that court. I was too busy looking at like, is that Mr. Freeze? Like in a robe from Batman and Robin? And when you get a close-up, they all look like these really weird, grotesque, like street performers who were doing imitations of them.
Yeah.
Or maybe I was just looking for something to pay attention to at that point.
To me, it seems like they got extras. They like went to a big sale at Spirit Halloween and then they handed out costumes. We're like, all right, go do this. It felt like a lot. Have you guys ever been to like Times Square?
Exactly.
Like they have the horrible off-brand like Mickey's. It felt like a crowd of that. But I was physically pausing. I was physically engaging with the movie, pausing it to look into the abyss.
And it looked back.
Which again was distracting from the horrible basketball game. Were you guys physically engaging with the movie?
No, not at that point.
I didn't want it to go any longer.
I was eating breakfast.
I couldn't. Pausing it would have been like, this movie is already almost 2 hours long. And pausing it was only going to, I might not even made it to this podcast recording.
Did you guys like scrub a little bit? Am I the only one who ever scrubs on this podcast?
That's cheating and you're a coward. All your fast forwarding.
Yeah, dude. I don't know. It's just movies. I gotta eat breakfast and get to work, you know? I mean, the big game battle thing, I really was wondering if they were going to stick to the actual lesson that they were trying to lay down, which is that this game is not what's important. Like, and it was kind of trying to communicate that to maybe an audience of children that are watching this that are like obviously having a good time because it's a basketball game, but what's really important here is the lesson that LeBron is playing a basketball game, but really he would do anything. Like it doesn't matter. Like if it's a basketball game or like fighting Don Cheadle fist over foot, he would do it in order to save his kid. And I was wondering if maybe they would just like actually stop the game and just like, which they do at a certain point where he like gets his son back on his team and the son helps him, you know, battle Don Cheadle. But I was kind of hoping like it would be a better deal if they would just stop the game there and just nobody, it's ambiguous. Who gives a shit about the game? That's the whole conceit. But the whole thing is, no, that is not what's actually important. What actually is important is winning a basketball game. And that's what I learned from Space Jam 2.
I think its biggest lesson is just, you know, let your kid do what they want. And that was the hardest thing it comes down on, as opposed to look how silly this world is, or being against, you know, corporations or something.
I think it's about winning.
Being a jock is awesome.
Yes.
And if you play video games in your adolescence, you're going to grow up to be a big loser.
Now, that is not the lesson.
So you better make those video games about basketball, or else your dad's never going to relate to you.
Video games, sports are cool.
Don Cheadle can sometimes also be CGI.
Did you guys like the way he looked when he got all those muscles?
Not at all. I just kept on being so confused. Why does he have to be this way? Why couldn't they just give him fake muscles or something?
Would you rather look at that or CGI cat with butthole?
I want to see the butthole cut of Space Jam, A New Legacy. That's what I want to see. So, yeah, that's Space Jam 2. I am interested now. I'm really interested that we do have somebody who's kind of a defender of it, and I appreciate that. Or else, you know, this could have just been a big pity party for ourselves for watching it. So, Emily, would you unwatch this? And do you want to throw any more light onto the topic in any closing thoughts?
I'll admit, I was being a Tony the first time around I watched this, and I did turn it off like in the middle of the basketball game. I think I was just mad I wasn't watching an NBA game. I was like, what is all this junk? Like, I just want to watch LeBron and the boys like dunk. And I'm okay. I was okay with some cartoon involvage, but I don't know. I was really dreading rewatching it. When Seth told me I was chosen for Space Jam 2, I was like, well, I'm going to have to suck it up.
You're a trooper.
Yeah, I think after consuming the energy juice shots, it created a new life for me. And I did view it under a lens of, okay, well, I do have a theory. This is off track. I do have a theory Michael Jordan paid off someone at Warner Brothers to make this movie bad because he absolutely refuses to have LeBron touch on anything with his legacy. But, after watching this like three times in the last year, I'm going to say, no, I don't really need to unwatch it. But I feel sad that the impact for Tony was that he feels like this is the death of art.
It's not your fault.
Like, I feel really sad that that's this is your impact.
This was like this movie punched his mother in the face is how he took it.
I live two blocks. You can actually see it from the window I'm looking out from the LeBron James I Promise School. And just across the street from it is the liquor store that I go to. And on the wall outside that liquor store is a giant Space Jam, A New Legacy mural that I go by every single day.
Yep.
This experience will live with me forever because of that.
I mean, we're all consumers. We all understood the references because at the end of the day, we're all Warner Bros.
A little bit.
So
I will say I'm a little, I think this movie maybe proved that I'm a little bit of a Warner Bro. If I'm going to pick one, I think they're doing a great job.
It was shameless, I thought, in its presentation. I thought it could have been way more flashy in that way, but they really just had, you know, White Walkers jumping in the background. That's fine. King Kong was pretty quiet. King Kong could have been a lot louder. I don't know.
They did have a Matrix planet and Granny talking about her Twitter and stuff before she kicked the shit out of those people.
Yeah, maybe it was just the laziness that bothered me more than as opposed to it being like this movie didn't ruin Casablanca for me. And it's not like this isn't going to be remembered the way that those movies are. So it's not like it really sullied anything. It just seemed easy. This was a thing that you recognize and they dangled a lot of keys in front of our faces. And except for that one little stretch, didn't even really do anything with it except just kind of freaking your mind out to see Danny DeVito penguin standing there with the mask, and so it didn't really end up even doing that much with all of that stuff. So I guess there are more parts of this that are just a regular, not very interesting or fun kind of bad family movie without necessarily being offensive or a giant disaster, but That little sprinkling of all of the intellectual property stuff just puts all these bad thoughts in my mind about where things are going. So this is a pretty easy unwatch for me. Actually, I plan to unwatch it later tonight. Whoa. Maybe.
Wizard.
Tony unwatched it before he even got to the end. I don't know.
I don't know if I would unwatch it necessarily. I felt like the problem is with it is like I felt like I had to watch it because of my whole nostalgia for Space Jam and like Looney Tunes and things, which they saw me coming for sure. I'm part of this demographic. So I had to watch it. I'm not having a great time with it. I do have the same kind of feeling, of it just being a throwing it in my face of just this annoying self-aware trend of being self-aware about being self-aware, but not doing anything with being self-aware, which I do find depressing a little bit. So I guess I just didn't need to see Bugs Bunny disappoint me so much and everybody else disappoint me so much. So maybe it's an unwatch. I don't know. I'm a little, maybe a light unwatch on this one. But the real thing is I don't have a huge opinion about it. I think that's sort of what separates the bad movies from the like Cats movies for me, right? Where they're just like, they're so bad it's good. There's something interesting going on there. It's more complicated than just being like bad or good. Where this one is just sort of like, take it or leave it. It doesn't really, I don't think there's anybody who's like living and dying by this thing. Or like loves the shit out of it, or even is really all that like writing an essay about how horrible it is, except for Tony and his Dark Knight of the Soul. Although it's definitely worthwhile reference point if you're like talking about this brand of awful metaverse stuff.
So no midnight screenings of this one with people dressed up like gremlins and space ghost in the audience.
Only if they put a butthole on every character. And a turkey on every table.
And on that note, Emily, thank you so much for joining us and taking our abuse, particularly Tony's. It's really a side of him I've never seen before, and I'm ashamed and alarmed. And
we'll work it out. We'll talk. We'll talk with Tony.
I want to take Tony's pain away, but thank you for letting me
we all do
be here.
Not that 41 minutes of it.
No, it was such an honor having Emily B.
And the name of Emily's podcast again is
I'm So Miserable.
It's the worst podcast ever, and Unwatchables is better. Oh, it's on like Spotify, Apple, all the normal ones.
You can find Emily's bad podcast in all the normal places, she says, and we will link to it in our episode description as well.
Aw.
And you got a letterbox.
Oh, yeah. Plug that.
Oh, yeah. You can read every dumb thought on my Bad Girl Diary. Big disco fan on Letterboxd.
Do you have Space Jam log?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I did give it a scathing review the first time around, so everyone's going to think I'm a big phony.
I got mine like half written. I think I spent longer than 41 minutes writing.
Unwatchables is produced by Tony Scarpitti, hosted by me, Mark D'Ottavio, and Seth Troyer, with artwork by Micah Krause. You can find Seth and I on Letterboxd under Mark D'Ottavio and Sloth Troyer. You can also check us out at unwatchablespod.com for links to our Twitter and Instagram, or support us on Patreon for bonus content and to have a say in what we watch. Thanks for listening.